How is everybody? You good? Man, that was great. Thanks, Chris, and you guys for leading us, man. Just, there's, you know, these guys always do a great job, but then there's just certain nights where, I don't know if Chris just like ate his Wheaties this morning or what, but like it was just, anyway, the spirit was good tonight, and I appreciate what those guys do. It's just a true blessing. So we're, turn your attention, if you will, tonight to Mark chapter 10. We're going to wrap up in Mark chapter 10. This bridge chapter in the book of Mark, where Mark is really moving us from Jesus' public ministry of teaching to Jesus' public ministry of suffering and dying on the cross. And so this chapter right here is sort of a bridge between those two ideas. And here at the end, these last six, seven verses, we're going to meet, come across this event, the blind man, Bartimaeus. Some think he was a young man, some think he was an old man, some don't even know. He was just a man who was blind that Jesus happened to walk across, and his event is recorded, and it's got a lot here for us to look at, and it's just very inspiring. It's very great truth that we're going to see tonight. So Mark, in a very few words, is sort of moving the action along like he always does. You know, Mark is always using the words immediately, quickly, those kinds of things. Jesus is the Messiah who's on the move, so to speak, always in Mark. And he says they come to Jericho. And that's important because they come to Jericho, and Jericho sits at the base of the mountains to where you then head up into the mountains to go to Jerusalem. And it's quite breathtaking geography. I haven't seen it. I've seen pictures of it. I haven't seen it in person. But it goes in a 14-mile span from Jericho to Jerusalem. 14 miles is all that is, and it rises 3,300 feet. And Jerusalem sits up on top of the hill. That's why even though Jericho sits to the northeast of Jerusalem, anytime you read in the Bible, people leave Jerusalem and go to Jericho, they always say they went down to Jericho, even though it's north, because it's such a steep drop going down. And so Jesus is heading in that direction. He's going to Jerusalem, and he's coming through Jericho, through the residential side and the business district of Jericho, because that's the way to go to Jerusalem. And he would, after this event, he would walk up that steep elevation, go through the Kidron Valley, and go over the Mount of Olives, where just a few days after he passes it, here we're going to see he'll walk over that Mount of Olives, and there in just a few days, he will be there praying to his Father before he is arrested. And I often wonder when Jesus, you know, when he walks through the Mount of Olives, I wonder what he thought. Here he would be, and I think he knew he would be there in just a few days. We'll see that next week. And this week we want to focus on Jesus just pausing for just a moment to pay attention to a man who needs desperate help. So we have blind Bartimaeus and Jesus interacting with him. And this is the last miracle that Mark records in his gospel. From here, it's all about the cross. Jesus as the suffering king. And so we come to the end of this, we come to the end of chapter 10, where we've been taught what the cost of discipleship looks like, what the cost of following Jesus looks like, and then what it actually looks like. And tonight, we're going to see the life that we have to continue to live before Jesus in order to follow him. And so let's read it and then unpack it. Here's starting in verse 46. And they came to Jericho, and as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a great crowd, Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside. Notice that there's a lot of details. A lot of people think that, commentators think that Bartimaeus was not just a man that they just happened to pass one day, but they did happen to pass. But after this event, they believe that Bartimaeus joined the disciples, and that's why they knew him so well. That's why Peter, who gave Mark the information to write this gospel, knew who Bartimaeus was, knew who his father was. And so this becomes most likely a close friend, so to speak, of the disciples. So it's Bartimaeus. And when he, Bartimaeus, heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And many rebuked him, telling him to be silent. But he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up, he is calling you." And throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" Now that question we've seen already. Just last week, we talked about James and John. They come to Jesus and they say, let us sit at your right hand, your left hand, after he asked them that same question, what do you want me to do for you? Mark is repeating that question on purpose, and Jesus, I think, was repeating it on purpose. And the blind man said to him, Rabbi, let me recover my sight. And Jesus said to him, go your way. Your faith has made you well. And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on the way. You see, Bartimaeus, this wasn't a miracle that Jesus did and then leaves and the person does not follow. But Bartimaeus decides, no, what I just experienced, I want to see more of that. And so he begins to follow his way, becomes Jesus's way. So when Jesus says, go on your way, he's basically saying, okay, well, which way are you going? Because that's the way I'm going. And I don't know if you've seen this on Facebook to kind of set this up, but recently I've seen this commercial going around on Facebook for people who are colorblind. And the way the commercial plays out is these people who are colorblind and they've created these glasses that they can put on and to help them distinguish colors. And I don't know, you might be colorblind or you might know someone or someone in your family, but the gist of it is that certain colors like red and green are not distinguishable. They're red, they look exactly the same, perhaps maybe grayed out a little bit, but they can't tell the difference between those two colors. Nearly 300 million people suffer from color blindness. They can't see. The world is almost a little bit dull, as some of them say. And so I was watching that commercial again today, and a couple of the people that were on that commercial, one girl said that she often, you know, she's a college-age girl. She said, you know, my friends, they love me, but they often kind of just joke and pick at me because I can't tell the difference in, like, purple and pink, like the girly colors, you know, the different shades. I can't see the difference, and so I kind of just get a little mixed up. Another man talks about how as a child growing up, he's a father, and he watches his children or his son draw pictures with crayons. And his son is always switching out crayons to draw the picture, and he's never understood why. And then there's another man who talks about how growing up as a kid with color blindness, he didn't even know anything was wrong. At first, he didn't know anything was wrong. Then when he found out something was wrong, he thought something was wrong with his brain, but it turns out something's not quite right with his eyeballs, not his brain. And story after story, they tell. And then they put these glasses on. And the reaction is it's priceless. It's almost I thought about showing you guys the commercial, but just because you have to see it to believe the expression on their face. One, the guy who says, you know, I never understood why my kid was switching crayons. He's looking at his son's pictures and seeing the color that his son sees for the first time. And he's just like, wow, look at this. The young lady, she's looking at a wall and they've painted all these different shades of pinks and purples. And she's like, man, it's just so alive and vivid. And she can see the differences. And then she takes them off and she says, man, the world is dull again. And they see sunsets differently. And it's quite amazing how people who are colorblind, and then they put these on and they begin to see the world the way it's meant to be seen, vivid and full of color, and they almost sort of, the smiles come across their face that they can't get off their face, and they just come alive. And that's what's happening here in a very real way for Bartimaeus. People have been seeing Jesus all throughout the Gospel of Mark, but they've missed a lot of times who he is and what he's come to do. And then there's blind Bartimaeus sitting there. He cannot physically see. And yet in the midst of that limitation of sight, he's one of the first ones to see Jesus for who he really is. And what we see is that Bartimaeus, he has this limitation of sight. He can't see. But his limitation, it was not a liability. It was an opportunity for Jesus to show his glory. And that's the sort of the main idea that we're going to get to tonight. But let's ask the question, do you ever consider your limitations? Do you ever think about them? For some of us, when we look in the mirror in the morning, our limitations stare right back at us. And we don't maybe say it out loud, or maybe we don't voice it to anybody that we know, but we carry it internally. I mean, we are painfully sometimes aware of our limitations. I made a list a little bit. In a culture, our culture that celebrates beauty, physical beauty and physical attractiveness, some of us realize we have a limitation of not physical beauty and not physical attractiveness. And it stares at us every time we see a picture of ourselves. Or, you know, our body image is not what it's supposed to be, and we're insecure about that. And in a culture that celebrates wealth and fame and fortune and popularity, some of us feel this limitation that no matter how hard we work and no matter how hard we try, we just still can't get enough. And then in a culture of Facebook, Instagram, whatever else social media you can name, where people put the pictures of their best stuff of life, and then they put it on Instagram, Facebook, and all these kinds of things, and we look at that and we think, man, they've got their life together. And then we look at our life and we go, I do not have my life together. I look at people's sometimes pictures on Facebook of their kids, and I'm like, wow, look at their kids. Their kids are like, their clothes are clean. They're all dressed nice. Their hair is nice. It's perfect. And then I look at my kids and it's like, what is wrong with them? And then, you know, we get on Facebook and sometimes, you know, you look and you feel this limitation of like, well, I'm just not as smart as, I'm not as creative, I'm not as witty as some other people. My post didn't get as many likes or as many shares as some other person's post did. And it's instant feedback. And we sort of fall into that trap of looking at the best of everybody's world and then comparing our everyday world and thinking, man, I'm missing it. And we feel this limitation. But what if, when we think about our limitations, just like Bartimaeus does here, he knows his limitation. He knows he can't see. But what about this? What if we took those limitations and recognized them, acknowledged them, and admitted them, and then realized that they're not liabilities, but they're opportunities? That's what Jesus does. He takes the things that we feel like are holding us back and says, that's not a liability. That's an opportunity for me to shine. Let's see it. That's what Jesus says. The glory of Jesus shines brightest in the limitations of life. That's what he does through Bartimaeus. He's got this limitation. He can't see. He can't help himself. He's a blind beggar. Jesus comes along and in the midst of that limitation says, let me show you the opportunity that you have. Bartimaeus can do nothing but beg. He has no power. And in this culture, in this time, there was no government agency to help him out. There was no nonprofit organization to help him out. A place like Heartland Hands did not exist for the beggars to go to get food. They were completely reliant upon sitting on the street and hoping that people would be generous for that day. He had severe limitations that he could not get past, he could not get over, he could not overcome them on his own. Blind people can't make themselves all of a sudden see. But Jesus can do things that no man can understand. And so, first of all, we've got to see the limitation of our true conditions. And that's where Bartimaeus starts. He understands he's limited. He understands that he has this limitation in his life, and it's caused him to live this kind of life of a blind beggar. And you'll notice how Mark, he contrasts the awareness of Bartimaeus with the non-awareness, so to speak, of James and John. In the previous, what we saw last week, you know, James and John, we talked about it. They come up to Jesus and they say, you know, we want you to do something for us. What do you want me to do? We want you to put us at your right and your left hand because we've got something to offer. Bartimaeus, he's blind, but I think he's got more sight than those two guys had who could see perfectly. And he comes up to Jesus, he says, Jesus, look, only thing I need from you is mercy because I've got such need. I don't bring anything to the table except need. And what Mark is reminding us is that we are all blind beggars sitting by the road. That is our true condition. We all have this severe limitation of spiritual blindness that we cannot see on our own, we cannot overcome on our own, and we cannot overthrow on our own. And so he cries out to Jesus, and he cries out in a way that the disciples had not yet. You hadn't seen a disciple yet say, Jesus, have mercy on us. You've seen two disciples say, you know, put us in a good position. Give us our due. Give us what we have earned. And it's significant. You see it in the way Bartimaeus talks about Jesus. You see, because the crowd was telling him, he hears the hustle and bustle going by in the crowd, and he says, who's here? He knows somebody important is coming. And they tell him it's Jesus of Nazareth. But notice how he changes it. He says, Jesus, son of David. There's a big difference between just Jesus of Nazareth and Jesus, son of David. Jesus of Nazareth, it's understood that, you know, we've even maybe seen the comment in other Gospels, and I think it's in Mark, where people comment and say, can anything good come out of Nazareth? So Bartimaeus doesn't just say, well, this is just some teacher from a little podunk town out in the middle of nowhere. This is the son of David. This is the son of promise. This is the Messiah, the one we've all been waiting for, and the one, the only one who can do anything about my limitations. That's very important how he talks about Jesus. He sees him for who he needs to see him, but the only way he does it is that he first understands his own limitations. He first understands his own true condition, that he can do nothing on his own. He needs the Son of David to have mercy on him. Do you recognize your own limitations? Do you see them? Do you try to cover them over? Do you try to hide them? Do you try to avoid them? Do you try to push them to the side? Let's not do that, because that's where the work of Jesus begins in our lives. When we recognize and we voice and we admit, man, I am so limited, I am so spiritually blind that I cannot see on my own, that's the place where Jesus begins to work. We have to acknowledge the limits of our true condition, and the limitations that we have in our lives are opportunities for Jesus to shine his glory. It reminds me of a friend of mine. He has a five-year-old son, and his five-year-old son loves to play Mario and those kinds of things on his video. I think it's a DS. And I was hanging out with these guys one day, and I was watching his son play. His dad and I were talking, just hanging out. His son was playing. He was getting, you know, having a great time doing all this Mario thing, jumping and who knows what. And then he got frustrated. He got angry. And he took his DS, and he walked it up to his dad, and he said, here, can you help me? And without missing a beat, his dad and I were talking, without missing a beat, he just takes it and starts playing, and he and I are keeping on this conversation. It was a very talented person here. He could play DS and talk to me at the same time. But he played it, and he passed the level for his son, and then handed it back to him. Well, I thought that was interesting. So I looked at the boy, and I said, hey, how far are you on that game? And he said, oh, man, I've gotten a long way. I've gotten a long way. I've passed off lots of levels. Have you passed them off, or has daddy passed them off? Well, not an answer on that one. And I asked him, I said, does your dad help you a lot? And he says, this is what he said. He said, well, only when I can't do it. Then I need him to help me. And it's funny, but that little boy, I think, paints a great picture for how we need to come to Jesus. Does he help you a lot? Only when I can't do it. And there's a lot that I can't do. I've got severe limitations. I am spiritually blind, just like Bartimaeus. Folks, listen, we're not weak. We're helpless. We're helpless. It's not just that we're trying to do our best. It's that we can't do anything without him. So do you see your limitations? And when you do, the second thing begins to kick in. We get desperate in those. That's a good thing. We get desperate in our limitations. And that's what Bartimaeus does. When I realize the limitations of my life and the truth that Jesus, he works best, that those limitations are not liabilities, but they're opportunities for Jesus to work, then I become desperate to see Jesus step in and bridge the gap between where I fail, which is everywhere, and where he succeeds, which is everywhere. And I need him to bridge that gap. But it comes through desperation. That's how it came for this for Bartimaeus. Keep in mind the scene, a blind beggar and the crowd moving around. And the crowd keeps telling him, be quiet, shut up, leave the teacher alone. But he is insistent that he be heard. He even gets louder than he was initially. Why? Because he is desperate that Jesus hear him. He is not going to let Jesus pass him by and let the opportunity of Jesus to work pass by his life. This is not the call of a man who feels like he can do some things, but he just needs Jesus to sort of tip the edge. This is the call and the prayer of a desperate man who realizes, I am completely helpless and weak and can do nothing on my own to fix my condition and my limitations. I need Jesus to do everything. That's the desperation. That's where we need to get to in our lives. And he was desperate. He had to get Jesus' attention. A few years ago, when I was a student pastor here at Heartland Church, I had a student who loved the band Skillet. It's a rock band. You may have heard of them, you may have not. They're still around. But they were playing in Memphis, and he wanted to go see him, and his parents couldn't take him, so I said, well, I'll take you, because I like Skillet. Shea happened to be out of town, and so I was going to go, and going to go by myself, and he said he wanted to go, so I took him. So we did. I picked him up, went downtown. They were playing at called Minglewood Hall, I think is what it's called, down in downtown Memphis. And so we were driving around trying to find a parking place, and we're driving around the club, and as we come around the back of the club, he all of a sudden, he just screams, oh my gosh, there she is. Oh my God, I'm trying to find a parking spot. And this kid's screaming in my ear. He's about 16 or 17 years old. I said, what are you talking about? He said, it's Jen, there's Jen. And I looked over and there was a young blonde-headed lady who I recognized from the band. She was their drummer. And apparently, he was quite infatuated with her. And he said, pull the car over, pull the car over. So I did. I pulled the car over. I was, you know, let him have his infatuation. I don't think he's dangerous. So he jumps out of the car and he starts shouting her name, Jen, 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 over and over and over again. And whether she heard him or not is debatable. I don't know. But she never stopped. And neither did the people who were escorting her around. And he got back in the car and I said, well, why didn't you run over there? He said, well, I saw the security and I didn't, you know, I figured, I think he said, you know, I think they might have thought, you know, a 17-year-old deranged kid running at, you know, at her, you know, might be a security threat. So I just got back in the car. He was a little nervous. But he was desperate for her to hear him and to see him, but she never did. She never turned around. She never saw him. And to this day, probably never has a clue who that kid is. But he remembers that still, that she missed him. But Jesus didn't miss him. Jesus heard him. Jesus heard the cry of a desperate man, crying out, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus responds and says, call him. Call him, which is Jesus' way of saying, tell him to come to me. Tell him to come here. Once Jesus hears our call of desperation, folks, he says, come. Come. Come close. And notice how Bartimaeus reacts. When Jesus calls him, he jumps up, throws off his cloak, and runs to Jesus, comes to Jesus. Now, Mark makes some very interesting, at least one very interesting statement, I think. And that's the fact that he says, it's in verse 50, throwing off his cloak. Now, that's important. And it's easy for us to miss because we don't wear cloaks anymore. We don't wear tunics and we don't wear cloaks. But this idea of what Mark is trying to get across here is this. In this day and age, a blind beggar, he usually had probably two possessions, a tunic and then a cloak that he wore over that. And that cloak was very important. To him, that cloak a lot of times was a bed. It was a pillow. It was cover from rain. It was shade when the sun is intense and he has no way to get out of that sunshine. They used it for a lot of different things. And essentially, it was their lifeline. They used it to help stay alive. It was what they held on to because they needed it to live. But notice what Bartimaeus does. When Jesus calls him, he throws it away. Because he will not let anything come between him and Jesus in this moment. Even what he depends upon, what he thinks in this moment is most important for life, his cloak, he says, no, 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 this is not life anymore. He is life. And he throws it away. What is keeping you from being desperate for Jesus? There are so many things that reach and grab for our hearts and grab for our attention, and so many things that say, give me your life and I will give you life back. And they're lies, they're untruths, and they're false idols and false gods, and they're things that we worship with our lives and let us down over and over and over again. And Jesus says, throw off your cloak and come to me. Come to me. What stands between you and Jesus? What stands between you becoming desperate to get close to Jesus? Perhaps it's as simple as something like sleeping. You know that the only time you've got to spend time with Christ is in the mornings. And yet it's just so hard to not hit snooze, right? It's just so difficult. But what we have to learn is that no matter how rested we are physically, if we don't spend time with Jesus, we'll be unrestful spiritually. So we can be rested physically all we want. But if we don't spend time with Christ, we will always have unrest. in our souls. Maybe it's time. Maybe it's your time. You're just like, I don't have enough time. I don't have any more time. I can't give any more time. I can't. I just don't have any margin in my life with my time. I'm stretched as it is. I don't have enough time for an MC. I don't have enough time to give to anything else. I've got all my time taken up. And it's a risk, just like throwing off your cloak. It's a risk to adjust your schedule, to spend time with Jesus, to spend time with his people. But I think the bigger risk is trying to go through life overcoming your limitations by yourself. There's a bigger risk, a greater risk. And I can't always promise you that if you get involved with God's people and make the time maybe to get involved in a missional community, I can't always promise you that it's going to be perfect and it's going to be wonderful and it's going to be great. I can't promise you that. But I can promise you this. If you don't make time and take the risk to be around God's people, to be around Jesus, you're taking a greater risk trying to make it through life on your own. I can promise you that. Or maybe it's the crowds. You see, Bartimaeus, he had a crowd who told him, look, stop. You're getting a little crazy. Just be quiet. If he wants to come to you, he'll come to you. Just stop. And perhaps it's the crowds in your life. You know, some of us, we have crowds around us who just, they can say things like, you know, go to church, that's fine, but don't get too crazy. Don't take it so seriously. I had a friend who was in an MC or hosted an MC at their house, and he came to me and he said, look, my neighbors think I'm in a cult. I said, why? Because these people come to our house every Monday night. They think I'm in a cult. Why? Because culture doesn't understand being that desperate for Jesus. We window shop Jesus. If he fits for that day, great. If not, we'll try on something else. We've got to be desperate for him. And don't listen to the crowds. The crowds will tell you, look, calm down. It's okay. You don't have to take that church stuff so seriously. You don't take that Jesus stuff so seriously. In fact, just keep it private. That's the way it works best. Christ followers can't do that. We can't keep it private because we are so desperate. We know that we were helpless. We were worthless on our own until Jesus came. So don't be afraid. My friends, don't be afraid to be desperate for Jesus. Don't be afraid to throw off your cloak. Don't be afraid to whatever it is that you're clinging onto for life to let it go so you can grab a hold of Christ. And then when you do, just like Bartimaeus saw, you'll see limitless glory shining in our limited lives. Limitless glory. That's what Bartimaeus experienced. That's what we all need to hope for and desire. Limitless glory working in our lives. In this day and age, as Jesus walked along this road, no doubt, I have no doubt that he passed many beggars. And I have no doubt that he might have passed many blind beggars on that road in Jericho. But there was only one who called his name. There was only one who shouted over the crowd. There was only one who, when the crowd told him to be quiet, said, no, I refuse to be quiet. There was only one who, when Jesus called him, threw off his cloak and came to him. And there was only one who said, look, this is not just Jesus of Nazareth. This is Jesus, the Son of David, the promised Messiah, the one we've all been looking for, the only hope. There was only one who heard, only one blind beggar heard the Savior King say, what do you want me to do for you? Only one. Only one cried out because only one really knew his limitations. He's the only one who refused to be silenced because he knew he had no other hope besides Jesus. And because of that, he is the only one healed. He is the only one who experiences the glory, the power, the wonder, the awe, the majesty, the grace, the mercy that he asked for. He is the only one who experiences it. That's because he understood, or maybe he didn't even understand, but he began to see that my limitation is not a liability, but it's an opportunity for Jesus to shine. And I don't know what you feel like your limitations are. And I don't know what you feel like might be holding you back. And for some of us, we might be thinking, yeah, I've got this limitation, and God just, he can't use somebody with that limitation. My friends, those limitations are not liabilities. They're opportunities for Jesus to shine, for Jesus to display his glory through your life. The question for us is, are we going to admit them, or are we going to try to hide? Or are we going to be like blind Bartimaeus and say, I am so limited? But that's not a liability. It's an opportunity for Jesus to work. And we cry out to him in desperation, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on us. So what is this? What do we need to take away from this passage? A couple of things I want us to draw in on. First is this, that we need to remember the darkness of blindness so that we can rejoice in the light of true sight. It's important that those of us who are Christ followers remember what it was like to not be following him. Not because it has power in our life. It has no power whatsoever in our lives anymore. But it's important to sometimes remember the darkness because it makes the light that much more sweet. It's important sometimes to remember the bitterness because it makes the present of following Christ, of knowing that we're redeemed, of knowing that we're reconciled, of knowing that the songs that we sang just a moment ago are true, that there's nothing that can save us but Jesus' royal blood. There's something about remembering sometimes where Jesus brought us from, how he dug us up out of the pit and said, you have such limitations, but those are my opportunities. We need to remember these things sometimes. And then secondly, it will be done early tonight. May I see my limits. See your limits as places where Jesus is shine, where Jesus' glory will shine. See your limits. See your limitations and admit that they're there. Acknowledge that they're there. And then ask for mercy. Jesus, have mercy on me. And ultimately what Mark wants us to see here is that all of us are Bartimaeus. All of us are the blind beggar on the road as Jesus goes up to Jerusalem calling out and crying out saying, have mercy on me. I can't do anything on my own. I can't help myself. I will go to work tomorrow and struggle again without you. So Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. And I think when we call out like that, when we cry out like that, here's what I think we'll hear. Just like Bartimaeus heard in this passage, take heart, get up. He is calling you. Those are sweet words. The eternal Son of God is calling you. Not your neighbor, not that super spiritual guy that you know, not that person at work who prays all the time, but you. Take heart, he's calling you. But I have such limitations. Perfect. That's what he's looking for. Because those limitations are not liabilities, they're opportunities for Jesus to work. So know them, acknowledge them, admit them, and then let Jesus shine his glory through them. Amen? Let's pray together. Father, we love you. And God, we thank you that you love us. Father, thank you for moments like this in the life of Jesus. God, thank you that we can learn about his mercy, about his grace, about his love and care. Father, I pray for all of us here as we move out from these walls, God, that you would help us see our limitations and not be afraid of them, not feel like they're holding us back, but God, that you would show us how you're going to work in them. And Father, may we all give you the glory, and God, may we all get up and take heart. Because you've called us. I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.